are listening to WSFM LP on 103.3 FM. We're here in Asheville, North Carolina. Maybe you are streaming us at www.ashevillefm.org. And I want to remind you that our website does have our shows archived as well, so you can take a second listen if you want. We're Dreamers and Doers. Monday mornings, we have the pleasure of introducing you to and informing you of and inspiring you, we hope, with interviews from a couple of our dreamers here in Asheville. These are folks who are dreaming and they're doing just what the world needs, dreamers who do and who are doers. I want to remind you that this morning on Dreamers and Doers, program support is brought to you by the Fine Arts Theater, specializing in art and independent films, as well as special events. Temporarily, it is closed. However, current films are available to watch from their website at fineartstheater.com for more information. Fineartstheater.com for more info. The Van Winkle Law Firm is also supporting your local radio station. They are a full-service firm with two locations in Western North Carolina. The firm offers drive-in will signing, conference calls, and video conferences to safely provide their clients with legal assistance in this uncertain time. For more information, VWLAWfirm.com, VWLawfirm.com for more information. So again, we're delighted this morning that you will be able to join us on Dreamers and Doers. I have two amazing Dreamers and Doers for you this morning. On the second half, we'll welcome Jacob Rodriguez. But our first half, we have a delightful lady who I have the pleasure of knowing for a couple years now, Cortina Janelle Caldwell. I've known her for at least, 6 or 7 years, and she is a definite force. She's a queer two-spirit descendant from generations of Southern, West African, and Indigenous farmers, artists, engineers, entrepreneurs, and creatives. Cortina is also a totally entrepreneurial spirit that she learned from her grandmother's hand. She's also a long-term writer and published poet and writer as well. She's a motivational speaker. She's an artist who uses many different mediums in her pursuit of visual and art. And she's also a community builder. She's a cultural organizer. She's a creative facilitator and event experience designer. And we want to really find out a little bit more about that today, an event and experience designer and a coach. She's also a consultant for individuals, groups, businesses, or communities that seek to have a more deep connection with their creative possibilities. She'd be the one to give you some good ideas on that. So, if all systems are go and we're good, we should have Cortina Janelle Caldwell on the line. Good morning, Cortina.
Good morning, Carol. Thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure. And what I'm excited about, as I mentioned in my intro, we've known each other for a while, and Are you born and raised in Asheville? I don't remember that point. Not that.
I am a native to Western North Carolina, born and raised in Morganton, and actually I do have family roots in Asheville as well. So, yes, I'm very much local.
So you are a poster child for local girl makes good. And I want us to get started and find out a little bit what you've been up to. When life as we know it was canceled around March 16, 17, something like that. Bring us up to date what you've been working on and what you've been doing. And also, I want to pronounce it ADE. How do you pronounce ADE project that you are so passionate about?
ADE.
Ade. Thank you, and I apologize for the mispronunciation. So bring us up to date on what Ade and what Cortina's been doing this last month or two.
Well, again, thank you all for tuning in and supporting Carol. We have known each other. We're doing the introduction. I was thinking about how many different cycles and, iterations of my work that you mm-hmm. bear witness to and supported. So I'm grateful for that. And, you know, really when I started Ade Project in 2018 alongside, my community, one of the key focuses and key emphasis was to reconnect us with our creative birthright that we all have access to, this creative capacity to reimagine and also to use art as we know it as a universal gathering tool of people, which it has been for since we had a culture to speak of in society.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, we're at the intersection of creativity and a just, equitable, inclusive world. And so a lot of our work really has ramped up during this time because we find ourselves in a moment amidst COVID-19 where folks are having to go back to the drawing board and to really think outside the box and think creatively. But we also see that although this is a time of physical distancing, socially we're more connected than ever in many ways, and that the human spirit is really triumphing and really making it known that we do need this connection and this capacity to be in community with one another. And
I think we're finding we have more time. Are you finding you have more time to do some of those things? Or not just self-reflection, but even more time to reach out and maybe have an hour phone conversation with somebody, which before mm-hmm. it would have been a one-minute text.
Right. Well, and I think it's that we're making room for things that we haven't had the mm-hmm. opportunity to make room for before. And we're getting back to the basics in many ways. A lot of the work that we do, again, with Ade is that centered around equity and inclusion, but also really illuminating creative capacities, especially for communities and artists of color. Our mission is to actualize equity, spark the creative inquiry, and reclaim the narrative. And, you know, as we've been moving through this process, it's really been about being responsive to the community and really elevating this understanding that we do need one another. We do need connection. We do need to think creatively. And, you know, some of these things have kind of gone to the wayside as we've been in pursuit of our own definitions of success and really mm-hmm. fixated on this concept and notion of being busy as like a badge of honor. And so what we're really seeing happen is that we're turning to artists, we're turning to facilitators, to community organizers, to people in community to really help us pivot and redirect in this moment because we continue to connect and we continue to build spaces. And us ourselves, we've had a lot of programs and been on a lot of conversations just to kind of keep the work going and keeping the connection right. flowing for people. And so that's been the most important thing right now. I mean, I have literally a list of 12, 13 things that we've been up to that I could read off. But I think really the heart of it, the essence of it has been around recognizing that this is a moment for us to remember that we are creative beings and we need that in our lives, whether we're, you know, a banking professional or a nonprofit leader or an artist. It's not about whether or not you consider yourself to be creative. We all have a creative capacity and we need to remember our birthright to access that, to think for ourselves, to create for ourselves and with one another, but also to really appreciate this aspect that we have to really to dream something up in our mind, in our thought, and then see it become our reality.
You know, and when you use the word artist, I know for most of us, or maybe for certainly for myself, I automatically go to immediately what I would call 2D artists, people who are putting things up on canvas or surface, painters. But the artist is really broad. It's reading, it's writing, it's music, it's a whole gamut of things. It's not limited to just one thing. So it sounds like you and I would be in agreement on the statement that all of us are artists. We just need to find how to best express it. Would that be fair to say?
Right. And I think for me, a term that I use, because people sometimes have this limited definition and assumption of what it means to be an artist, because let's be honest, artists have had a love-hate relationship with our society and our culture over the years. Mm-hmm. You know, folks really appreciate the fact that artists, much like historians, capture the essence and the reality of what's happening over any period or any change in our society. And so, you know, one of the realities too, looking 10, 20, 30 years ahead, of course, if we continue to take care of the earth and get to stay here, we'll look back on this period and really be looking to what art was created and what the artist doing and what came out of this time to really help us look back on our history as humanity to see what really happened during COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, so in that way, there's a love relationship, but at the same time, people have really given artists a bad rep around it not being a desirable career and that you have to suffer in order to be an artist. So we really have to also change that narrative, which is a lot of the work that I'm invested in as well.
Would it be fair to say, I like the direction you're going in terms of changing the narrative, because first off, many times the artist, regardless of what form he, she chooses to, or they choose to express themselves in, often can be critical of things that are going on, and often can mm-hmm. be almost prophetic in what could happen if certain conditions continue to go on. But also, mm-hmm. I think also it's human nature to want to be creative or to create something or to create something that's coming out of them from the inside to the outside. It's almost in some ways a communication. So we don't want to limit it to just the professional person who really seeks their career to be compensated or put food on their table by the fruits of their labors as they express their art, but it could be everyone. As I like what you mentioned before, the banker, the baker, all of these people coming together, and I want you to for a few minutes, if you could, explore a little bit with us. I'm fascinated by this reclaim the narrative. Could you comment a little bit on that?
Yeah, you know, again, it goes back to. And I could really spend all day talking to you about this, so I'll try to.
Oh, we could. When this is over, we're going to coffee, my dear. Anyway.
Yes, absolutely. As we always do. So, you know, for me, it comes down to this really key and core belief, as I've said before, that creativity is our human birthright. I don't mean that it's just the birthright for the people that can afford an art class. It's not just a birthright mm-hmm. for a person that chooses to be a visual painter or a photographer. It is for all of us. And when we connect to our creativity, we really engage in a process of critical analysis, of reflection, of inquiry, of connection, of expression. Science has proven time and time again that our creative capacities is what allows us to really develop into our holistic selves as human beings. And so when you look at how creativity has really been shunned and really been segmented only for those that dare make this a path in their life and, you know, in mm-hmm. our education system in the past, creativity and art has been one of the first core subjects to go, right? So we look at how we really haven't valued the role that we have with our creativity when it's something that we all need and all have in order to really be able to shape thought and to shape and innovate the kind of things that our communities and our world needs. And so mm-hmm. I honestly think that it is, you know, I wouldn't go as far as to say it's a crime against humanity for us to be refused our creativity, but I would say that we should be very perplexed at the lack of access that we have to really explore this part of ourselves that's so crucial to us being able to contribute and to really bring out our authenticity and our unique gifts that we're all born with, that we came here to contribute. And so I think focusing an organization and focusing a movement and work around our creativity and really reclaiming our ability to be creative and it not having to be limited to a certain population or group of people is the most important work that I feel called to do, because that to me is really allowing this way for self-actualization, for contributions to our community, for us seeing that we all have a role to play, and really our only job as, you know, neighbors, as mentors, as teachers, as educators, is just really to cultivate that space within others, within ourselves, and really share that experience. And so, you know, for me, that's really
what are some of the things. What are some of the things that Ade has been doing along that line? I know you mentioned earlier this morning a list of about 13 things, but I think it'd be interesting for the listeners to have an example of maybe a couple of the programs or opportunities that you folks have done. Because you've been boy, from the minute you Ade hit the ground running, or my awareness of it, you have really been prolific, I think, in offering opportunity, as I see it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And, you know, part of it has been the response and really seeing that once this, you know, creative thing came into being, right, that it became a connector. And I think that's the perfect example. You know, we're modeling it ourselves and in a lot of ways, what we believe in. So during COVID-19, and I'll back up and say that for folks that aren't familiar with our work or with the organization, the website to check out more is theadeproject.org, which is T-H-E-A-D-E project.org. And the website's pretty easy to navigate, and there's a link bookmarked at the top around conquering COVID-19, where you'll find a lot of information about what we've been up to during this time. But just to share, you know, a few of those things, on April 25th, so one of the more major things that we did was we had an event planned around Earth Day, celebrating Earth Day and Stand Against Racism, which is an annual week of really taking a stand and being vocal and creating community around this campaign that the YWCA on a national level puts forth. Originally, we and our collaborators, the YWCA and the Racial Justice Coalition, had planned on having this event at the Moth Light, right? And, you know, we all love the Moth Light, and it's been a great supporter of our work over the past couple of years. And in recognizing that we couldn't physically meet in person, we didn't want to cancel the event because we recognized the timeliness of having this gathering that was really focused on celebrating and acknowledging the place that we have on this planet, the necessity of really caring for the planet and caring for each other, and being able to look beyond racism as the ultimate measuring tool of whether or not we should be connected or who has access to opportunity. We held an all-day event, streamed 13 hours on Zoom, and, you know, we had over 25, maybe over 30 presenters, including all of our panelists. We had subjects that were covered in different tracks, which were Art is Our Response, which was a ceremonial track. We had Wellness and Self-Care. We had speakers and panels on things like self-care for Black women, decarceration as a new normal. We also talked about planetary healing and what's needed as we move forward. We also modeled open space because a big part of the event, too, was really showcasing and modeling for others that participated in the event how we really can continue to come together even in an online space. And so that was one of the major things that we did, and we'll be following up with some more action-based strategies that came out of that. But that was just a few weekends ago, and it was a success, and people that came seemed to really enjoy.
Is that available on your website, some pieces of that? It was called Just Us, wasn't it?
Just Us. And, mm-hmm. Just Us. And Yeah.
I saw about 4 or 5 hours of it. I noticed Bobby and also Elena and one of the panels. And I just sat here thinking, well, Cortina's going to be on my program. I'll just catch, you know, maybe half hour or so. I was on it for over 5 hours intermittently. I got so engaged with it. And I really want to thank you because I think it turned out to be a fairly nice day, so people had options. But I was really impressed to see not only the speakers, but it was very meaty and meaningful is my take on that. So can people access it on your website? Or
what I would recommend if they didn't attend, so we captured all the attendees' information by encouraging folks to fill out the contact form. Since it was pretty open source, we just allowed people to come in as they wanted to, which also I think was really helpful. We'll be sending out a follow-up this week with all of the recordings as well as how they can join the online communities that are being formed as a result of that Just Us event, because we recognize that the work should continue and the gathering should continue. So I would recommend filling out the contact form on the Conquering COVID-19 page so that you get the announcement. You can also join our e-newsletter as a way to get that announcement of the follow-up from the Just Us event for sure.
Tell us your website again.
TheIDayProject.org.
Okay, great.
And that's bookmarked at the top. A couple other things that I just want to mention that I really want to give lift to right now, similarly to you, and I think we've talked about this many times as I've been exploring having my own radio show over the years and just never could quite make the full jump because it truly is a full-time job, and I really respect you and the work that it takes to bring folks together in this space. But with, again, the shift with COVID-19, there's been a lot more that's opened up. So I'm actually going to be hosting a podcast called Rhythm and Resilience, which is going to be an online gathering space where we explore ancient traditions as well as and explore our radical imaginations and really give lift to creativity and how that's looked in the past and how that can look in the future as we build with our communities. And then another big piece of the work has been really paying attention to how we're showing up for youth. I think this is probably one of the hardest moments to be, you know, a preteen, a teen, even, you know, elementary age, because there's so much going on right now that, you know, maybe families or parents or teachers don't quite know how to translate or talk about because we're all in the midst trying to figure it out ourselves. I think for me, as somebody who was raised by my grandmother and who at 12 years old had my first job working for her in her catering business and, you know, learning under her wing as she built her business and, you know, really passed on a lot of that knowledge. I really, really hold a lot of space for teaching the next generation and really understanding the place that they have and acknowledging their gifts because that was done for me. And so I feel like that is the legacy work that Ade Project is also involved in, is always making space for youth at the table. And something that I mention a lot is this notion of nothing about us without us. In other words, if there's something that's being planned or designed and there aren't the folks at the table who that thing is being planned or designed for, then it's not equitable, it's not inclusive, and you can't really expect the engagement on the other side from that population. So we as adults can't be on these community check-in calls and, you know, these planning meetings talking about the future of education or the future of what school or even extracurriculars are going to look like or what's needed right now from youth if we're not asking them and really engaging their voice. And if we're not hearing, then that's also information for us to pay attention to. And so we actually have designed, along with our youth leadership team, an impact survey for Asheville City and Buncombe County youth, both those that we work with and those that maybe we haven't had a relationship with in the past. But we want to hear what's been the impact of COVID-19, what's been their experience, and how can we respond as an organization and really catalyze that with our community as well. And, you know, it's been beautiful to see. We sent it out the first week of May. We already have over 150 responses from students and counting. And we're going to, you know, that information is going to be pivotal to how we move our programs forward. We're hosting a space called Leaning In, which is a youth-led listening session this Friday, mm-hmm. Which we'll talk about mm-hmm. the results of the impact survey and also talk about some other youth programs. We've been doing online mm-hmm. creative sessions with a few local artists, and we hope to continue to build upon that roster of classes. But so far, we've been able to do Superheroes Academy with Bobby Williams, Art Around the House, mm-hmm. Which is like an upcycled art class with Tara Singh, an expressive drawing class with James Love. And we're at a point now with the sessions where parents are actually contacting us and requesting sessions for their youth right now, because again, we're recognizing that art and creativity is the first thing to go and not really something that folks know how to plan for. And that's where we can step in and really support. So really at that intersection of youth and creativity is a lot of where, the emphasis has been with the work that's been done right now.
Oh, I really salute you on that. And I've had Tara and Bobby on past programs. So maybe sometime in June or July, when I'm assuming kids will, quote, be out of school in the traditional sense, and maybe that's a time that'll really start percolating, come on back, because I think you're very smart to go from ground up rather than top down to as you mm-hmm. formulate things. I guess before we have our goodbye, I'm just curious, what have you learned from this whole COVID-19 experience? What has Cortina Janelle Caldwell learned, maybe about herself or the world or your own processes? What has this informed you or taught you?
I'd like to share like my top five things, if I can, that I want to leave listeners with, like key beliefs that have been reinforced by the reality of COVID-19. And I've spent some time thinking about this, and I've been able to do some writing on it. Mm-hmm. Number one, which I already mentioned, nothing about us without us. If you're designing and planning for something about a particular population, it's important to really include those folks, especially now, so that we're not making decisions on behalf of other people. I think number two would be, if there was ever a time to lean into equity, to celebrate and connect through our creativity and to commit to collective cooperative action, then that time is right now and forward.
Mm-hmm.
I think number three, being mindful of impact versus intention, and recognizing that we might have good intent, but the impact that we might have with our good intent is still valid. And there's a lot of really good intentions and well-meaning mm-hmm. actions right now. And we really have to also pay attention to what's the impact. Number mm-hmm. four would be, we are the holders of our own hope. So again, like I mentioned before, if we engage with our creativity and our own ability to think for ourselves and really determine what our communities need, that we do have the power to change things. And mm-hmm. I think number five, the last one, would be the earth is fine without us, but we're not fine. And we won't survive without the earth, right? Like, we're the guests, mm-hmm. and we're not the masters. Mm-hmm. And we would be wise to remember that beyond this moment. I think a lot of us have really seen how pollution has cleared in many places, how animals are returning to habitats and places that have not mm-hmm. been inhabitable. Mm-hmm. And then there are some places that are shifting to where they are not habitable. And, so the earth really is going to constantly restore herself and to rebalance herself, mm-hmm. and that we truly would be at the loss if we're unable to stay here because mm-hmm. of our own doing. And this really is a time mm-hmm. for us to pay attention to how we're in relationship with our natural resources, so that we can continue to live in this beautiful, amazing place. So that really is a lot of what I want to give lift to.
I would love everybody, our listeners, to I'll ask you to repeat your website, but also if you have your podcast, because what I do admire about you, Cortina, you are a deep thinker, and you allow yourself that opportunity to explore without label and definition or judgment. You go take the deep dive and look around, see what's going on, and it's really interesting what you have created, because I think your creativity, in my opinion, really shines in some of these organizations and events and experiences that you've designed and created. So
absolutely,
that's kind of out of the box when we talk about creativity. You are making and creating environments and spaces for others to then also experience their own. And it's pretty powerful.
And that answers your earlier question about what it means to be an event or experience designer, right? Is like this, this for me is one way that I'm really getting to express my creativity. So thank you for that.
Appreciate that. So your website and your upcoming blog would be?
So the website, which I'm going to just give that link because, again, it's the easiest thing, and you'll see the podcast linked at the top. You'll see the blog linked at the top. You'll be able to join the e-newsletter. So it's, again, theadeproject.org, which is the word the, T-H-E, and then the acronym for Artist Designing Evolution. So that's A as in apple, D as in dog, E as in evolution, project.org. And definitely be mindful to put the V in front, because if you don't, it'll take you somewhere completely different. That's not our website. You can also just Google Artist Evolution, and we should pop up.
Okay. Excellent. Well, I appreciate your time, and our guest today, Cortina Janelle Caldwell, is the creator of the Ade Project here in Asheville, and I hope you'll take a good look or a deep dive into the website. It's got a lot of good information. So let's come back maybe June, July, and find out what's cooking with some of the programs that you've been designing for our youth. Okay?
Absolutely. We'd love to. And thank you, Carol.
And meanwhile, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You as well. Bye-bye. Folks, you've been listening to the Dreamers and Doers Show, and we're kind of at the half-hour mark here. And I want to mention the fact that it is springtime, of course. I don't know, today doesn't feel much like it. But if times were normal, we would be gearing up for our spring fun drive right now. Instead, we've made the difficult decision to postpone our fundraiser out of respect for the suffering that many of you out there are experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic and the stay-at-home orders. But as a community resource, Asheville FM wants you to know we are still on the air, and we certainly are continuing to provide you with great music and entertainment. But we've also added new shows to keep you updated about the crisis, shows about a relaxation techniques, and even a story hour so young adults at home can be entertained as well as stay home to keep themselves safe and the community safe. And then early this summer, though, I think we will be, or you can expect us to go back to our normal fundraising. So keep listening. And if you are moved to contribute now, please do so. You can always visit www.ashevillefm.org. Click the donate button. So we thank you for supporting your community radio station, Asheville FM. So earlier today we had Cortina Janelle Caldwell with us. And our second segment, we have a gentleman named Jacob Rodriguez, I hope online. Jacob?
Yes, I'm here.
You're there. Yay! This is a little early for you. I've learned the hard way musicians are best afternoon.
Yeah, but, I thought I agreed to 9:30 p.m., but 9:30 a.m.
Jacob, welcome. I just want to mention to our listeners that Jacob's a native of San Antonio, Texas. At the tender age of 11, he's begun playing the saxophone. And I guess he picked up right around 18, 19 years old, moved to New York City for a bachelor's and also master's degree from the Manhattan School of Music. While in New York, he played with notables such as Aretha Franklin, Cyrus Chestnut, the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. He has a jazz career, certainly, with Marcus Gilmore, Walter Smith III, and others. But currently, in Jacob, it's been 13 years. You are with the Michael Bublé Band. Is that not right?
13, is that right? Yes, right. Wow.
Well, if it was 2007, so if my math is accurate.
You know, almost to the day, 13 years, yeah.
Wow. And as a saxophone, what is the size of his band? I see it on TV, but I can't count fast enough, so.
Back then we were only 8 horn players and then a 5-piece rhythm section. So there was 13 plus him. Mm-hmm. And now it's expanded to a full big band, which is 5 saxes, 4 trumpets, 4 trombones. Still the 5-piece rhythm section, but we also have 3 background vocalists, and then we pick up a 16-piece string orchestra in every town that we go to.
Wow. Wow. And I know we should mention our other Asheville guy, Justin Ray, who's also part of that group on trumpet. I assume typically trumpet. I could be wrong.
That's correct, yeah.
And then you've been part of a Grammy Award-winning album as well. But my question, I've always wanted to ask you this. What is it like to be on stage performing to, sometimes your crowds are 5, 6, 10,000 people, aren't they?
With his shows, yeah, they kind of average around 10. It's interesting. You know, I thought it was going to be an intimidating thing at first, and I definitely was nervous for the first bit of being on stage for a crowd that size, but then after a while, you kind of realize how much you fade into the background. So it's a lot more relaxing, you get to focus on the music a bit more. So yeah, it's not as intimidating anymore.
Well, a couple times I've caught the band on some TV shows, and I always see you and Justin, but you in particular to the right of Michael, whatever he's doing, moving around, and usually to see piano sometimes a little more forefront. But I often see you, so you've made it to the TV cut anyway. That's good. I forgot to mention you're also an adjunct professor at University of North Carolina, Asheville, and obviously on saxophone and ensemble work. So your guys just had their finals, didn't they, last week?
Yeah, everything wrapped up, I think, on Wednesday, and everything's done for the semester now.
Well, tell us a little bit about one of the things you do. I know you as a jazz musician, and I know you also as a composer of music. You mm-hmm. often have been seen locally, up until recently anyway, with a group called The Core here in town. But talk to us a little bit about, you mind if we focus a little bit on the jazz part of Jacob versus the Michael Bublé? First of all, I guess tell us a little bit about why you're attracted to jazz music, but also just the real significance that always blows me away is the amount of original music we are privileged to hear in Asheville versus cover bands and so on.
The attraction to jazz, excuse me, came kind of at a early age. I started playing saxophone in sixth grade, but once I was in seventh grade, I was able to get into the middle school jazz band, and my director, Penny Compton, was awesome. She was amazing. She really helped push me, and in a very accessible way. I feel like jazz can be really intimidating to a young kid, but she had a nice way of incorporating other styles of music, so it was always fun. Like, we were playing a lot of rock mm-hmm. music, a little bit of funk music, but it always came back to the jazz, and she just kind of helped push me at a young age to where, like, I feel like I had an inquiring mind. And back then, like, in the pre-internet days, I just had questions all day for her, and then kind of going forward for all my teachers after that. So, and it was a good age, and it was a good time for that too. Because I feel like I was only able to ingest the information I was given at every question. So it didn't ever seem like a daunting task until I got to college. Yeah. So, yeah.
Did you, as at young age, were there certain saxophone artists in the world of jazz that were people you looked up to, or that you would listen to? You'd obviously had a lot of LPs floating around, or could have. Were you listening to certain favorites at that time?
You know what's funny is, like, I feel like the first person I listened to a lot of, like, if you were looking for a name, front person horn player, would have been Dizzy Gillespie. So that's trumpet player instead of saxophone. Mm-hmm. But the first record I really got attached to was this Duke Ellington record, and didn't necessarily feature all the time, but Johnny Hodges was his alto sax player, and he was amazing. And Harry Carney, mm-hmm. who I later fell in love with, was his baritone player. I ended up really, really focusing on playing Barry sax from maybe 16, 17 until I moved to Asheville, basically. So Harry Carney was a huge influence.
Okay. Yeah. And tell us about, I think for a lot of people, there's different styles of jazz. There's hard bop, and we could go on and on with this. Tell us a little bit about just the genre of jazz, but why is it so intriguing to musicians like yourself who are basically classically trained, I guess, and certainly know music theory and all of that good stuff? I don't know. It's just a certain breed of cat that likes jazz. Did you get my drift on this? I'm not expressing it well, but when I look at the audience sometimes at the core or places like that, I see a lot of older people, and then I see a lot of younger people, but not a lot of in-between people. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I think I understand what you're asking now. I feel like the younger generation, the young millennials now, are really inquisitive, and they want to know about anything. And if they're even minutely into jazz, they're going to go down some sort of rabbit hole, and I think that will attract them to go attend jazz shows more than like maybe a late 20s person would be, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I kind of grew up with that in the background a little bit. Like Dave Brubeck, Take Five was kind of my awakening, so I don't know how many years ago that would have been, but it certainly, and then you had a lot of just different imaginative singing, Manhattan Transfer, other groups like that, so that was kind of what got me hooked in, and that would be back in the 60s, so that's a long time ago. Do you think jazz is having a resurgence, or is it just in Asheville that we're lucky to have such a plethora of good players?
You know, I feel like Asheville does have like a decent representation of nearly every sort of subsect of jazz going on. So I think, especially for a town this small, a city this small, I think there is a fortunate amount of jazz happening here for people to try to tag onto. I couldn't really speak on the world level with regards to that. Mm-hmm. I know jazz musicians are always hustling.
Uh-huh.
So, that's true of musicians in general. I mean, it is a struggle, and I feel like people who are fortunate enough to be able to pay their bills playing music are just, we're so lucky. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you are. And also, there's still a lot of room for original music. I know sometimes as a jazz musician, for example, if you're playing at a club, regardless, you know, people may request some of these old favorites or tunes that, you know, Take the A Train, whatever. But what's the excitement for you as a skilled musician, professional musician, to play original music like the Corps does, or I'm sure you do with other groups you participate in as well? What's the excitement about that? What's up with that?
leading up to us starting the Corps, we had this group that Bill Bears kind of was running. It was called Hard Bop Explosion. We did a bunch of hard bop music, you know, from 50s, 60s, hard bop, real soulful, lots of fun. But we did that for probably 3 years, I would guess. And it was great. Mm-hmm. And the crowds were great. And we did a lot of diverse programs, sometimes very, very focused on artists, sometimes very focused on specific records even. And mm-hmm. coming from that, we looked at each other one day and we're like, let's stop doing this and let's play our own stuff. Cause I feel like we were spending so much time, researching and transcribing and arranging all this music that's been played for 50 years, 60 years, and we weren't really spending any time on our own stuff. So we started this group that was solely focused on playing original music. And I think, so the three main contributors are myself and Bill Bears and Justin Ray, and the three of us definitely have big backgrounds in composition. My studies up in New York were intense. It would be like writing three to four original songs a week for my different classes and ensembles. Mm-hmm. So I had to be on it, and so that I picked up a lot of things here and there, and I go back through those notebooks all the time, and that's what leads me to new compositions sometimes. But also, like, mm-hmm. I find myself listening to a lot of music that's been written the last 5 years, not jazz, specifically not jazz, and finding ways that maybe finding some beats, maybe finding some harmonic motifs that, like, I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I want to see what happens when I play over that and what melody comes mm-hmm. out of this. And all of a sudden there's a new composition, you know?
Mm, okay. And I in the core really has, I know they have a, if somebody's listening and we're talking with Jacob Rodriguez, who's 1/5 of the core. And you can name the other guys for us in just a minute, but you can go to, what's the best way to go to listen to some core music website?
TheCoreJazz.com has got a little SoundCloud player up there that's got a lot of clips from our newest record. So I'd say that's the best way right now. I know it's currently a growing website, so we're throwing up some video clips there soon. Yeah, that's the best way, TheCoreJazz.com.
Okay, and who's on the core? Who's with you? Bill Bears, of course, piano.
Bill Bears is on piano. Yep, Justin Ray on trumpet. Zach Page is playing bass, and Evan Martin is on the drums.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you certainly draw a crowd, and you've been at Little Jumbo's every now and then. Shout out to them. Maybe when things open up again, we can have this opportunity to see you guys full force. I was just curious, now that you kind of are on a lockdown, we all are you writing more music, practicing more, or what's kind of some of the things that you've been up to with, you know, these limitations that we all have in common, but what does it mean for Jacob Rodriguez?
Yeah, that's a good question. I, you know, kind of leading into this whole lockdown, I had an idea of what my scheduled day was going to be, and then all of a sudden one of our professors got sick at the university, and so I had to step in and take over for them. So mm-hmm. kind of my Monday to Friday plans that I had got put on hold so I could cover these couple classes. So I was intending on starting that today. we'll see how it goes, but yeah, I've got like a practice regimen that I want to instill. I definitely want to start trying to write music again. And I want to get back into reading more books. But yeah, it's been difficult though, Carol. Like I'm not sure how
one of the things of I
pieces. Go ahead.
I would think one of the things you'd really miss is just playing with the other guys.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, it's tough to just play by yourself all the time on, especially saxophone, you know. I'm jealous of my friends who I get to see them doing all these live streams and they get to play their music for people and you know, because I don't know anybody who would want to listen to a saxophone player play by themselves. Yeah.
It's not known as a solo instrument, is it?
I mean, there's a lot of guys that can pull it off pretty well, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not Sonny Rollins, so I'm willing to say that.
I was just curious. It seems like there's always a saxophone and a trumpet next to each other. So explain to people like me why that is.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I feel like historically it's a good combination because of the different timbre of those instruments, but also there's a lot of different vocabulary that comes out of both instruments. And there's also for myself and Justin, so playing tenor sax and trumpet, that leads to like a really good arranging range, so to speak. So I can put myself pretty low and put him fairly high, and we can have a nice big spread when it comes to like writing music. I feel like it is fairly traditional to see those two together, but a lot of it for Justin and myself is that we've just been playing together for 13 years and we've been friends slightly longer than that. We just have a good connection especially on the bandstand. It's like having your best friend that you don't need to talk to sitting right there.
Oh, it really is. You two have, through the instruments, there's a communication there, and not only that, but there's this finite timing that you have for each other. I've cursed, my ears aren't trained like yours, but I've never heard an oops moment out of any of you, you know, where when you're supposed to end, you end, and when the other guy's supposed to, I mean, you just float in and out of each other. It's a beautiful thing. And then, you know, when you see the proficiency of the, I'll use the core example, the core musicians, it's a beautiful thing. It's to see the, it's a very transcendental experience for me. I will put it in that realm. I can't tell you technically why it's good, but I can tell you in my mind, it really is. It's like a washover. It's really refreshing, refreshing to me. So I'm loving it. I hope you guys will be back. Any rumors when you guys might be playing again or?
First of all, thank you very much for saying that. First of all, yeah, we greatly appreciate that. I couldn't tell you. We got to see how all these phases go, right? Seems like music in bars and music venues are far down the pecking order, in terms of like essential living. So we'll see. I mean, I guess we have to see how this first phase rolls out. I believe we would be included in whatever the third phase is. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so because it assumes, I don't know, from a musician standpoint, I would assume an audience would enhance a performance rather than distract from it. Especially Asheville has a beautiful response. I think when you guys or other qualified musicians, especially original musicians, I think you really draw the listening room crowd, you're not elevator music, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I think we're lucky in our little jumbo setup to where there's enough people with us, like really focused on what's going on. And I don't mind that bar atmosphere where people are talking in the back and you can kind of hear them here and there. That's okay with me. Playing for a crowd is definitely a plus. There are some very obnoxious crowds in this town though, with the brewery culture, I do have to say, but you know, it comes with it. It's definitely not happening so much at Little Jumbo, but you do see people falling over trying to request Mustang Sally and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, another place that we might as well give them a shout out has certainly been Barley's Tap Room on Biltmore there for years. And I know I've seen you there quite a few times. On Thursday nights, they're under renovation and obviously not open yet, but kind of give us an idea, how important is that to have that, I guess you guys call it a jam opportunity, where you sign up and you play? I would think it's very helpful to a musician to be able to do that, but I don't know.
Yeah, you know, when I first moved to town, so I've been down in Asheville since 2008 now, when I first moved into town, Chuck Lichtenberger was running a jazz jam on Tuesday nights at Tressa's, and over time it moved to Thursday nights at Barley's. He really was kind of pivotal in keeping that whole thing together. So, you know, big respect for Chuck for pushing through with that for so many years. It's really important, I think, for younger jazz musicians to at least kind of go and hear musicians play and know what they're playing. He had it all kind of set up where each week featured a different artist. So you could go and just check out 7 John Coltrane songs and maybe write them down or maybe follow along with your lead sheets and see what the players are doing. And I think it's a great resource for younger musicians to, you know, get on stage in a pretty easy atmosphere and no pressure. Cause I mean, it's so funny. And I've heard a couple of the younger musicians talk about how intimidating it can be to get on stage, and play with the Barley's House Band. But, coming from New York, there were so many cutthroat situations where it's like people, you know, you'd want to cry sometimes leaving the bandstand. And it was such an unhospitable situation. But the Barley's people have been amazing keeping that alive for so many years. I think it's been going 8 years over there now, I think, maybe longer.
Yeah. I guess like a friend of mine says, if you want to learn to dance, you dance. And if you want to learn to be a musician, sooner or later, you got to get up on the stage and play. Here's what has always intrigued me about this, in particular to jazz music. You guys obviously take turns, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, it's just you, and then boom, you're done, and okay, up pops Justin, or maybe take it away, drummer. How do you know? Because it's very good guys never seem to overlap, and I've never seen any fights upstage, so.
Yeah, we're pretty good at fighting offstage. How much more time do you have on this show? This is a
You've got about one more minute to tell us everything you know about that, and then we're going to have an opportunity to listen to Fee-Fi-Fo-Fum to take us out today.
Oh wow! Okay, cool. So each song kind of has a structure to it, like a chorus and a verse that you would see in a pop song. There's a specific length of a chorus that comes with every kind of jazz standard. Modern songs might have different sections, but everything inside of the composition is fairly defined in terms of like the length of what a person would improvise over. Now, whether or not you would do that one time or two times is up to the soloist or maybe to the composer, but you know when you would transition would be at the end of however many times. So whenever I'm playing, say, Take the A Train with Justin, I'm listening to Justin take the solo. I know when he's coming to the end of the song form and that I'm either about to start playing or he's going to go through the song form again. So yeah, there's a bigger structure than people realize.
Because I know there was some musicians like Miles Davis or others who were criticized for not letting the other guy in because they would get kind of carried away. Jason, we're going to in just a minute listen to Fee-Fi-Fo-Fum, an original piece by you. But I want to mention listeners, hang in with us because Democracy Now! Will be up at 10 o'clock with Amy Goodman. So Fee-Fi-Fo-Fum is one of your original pieces, correct?
No, that's a Wayne Shorter song.
Oh, okay. And but that will be featuring you. Any comments on that before we let her rip?
No, that's myself and Bill Bears and Dr. Brian Felix, who is the head of the Jazz Studies program, or he's the head of the music department at UNCA. He's the co-chair of the Jazz Studies program with Bill.
All right. Well, here we go with Fee-Fi-Fo-Fum. Our guest today was Jacob Rodriguez. Thank you so much. I can't wait to hear you guys again. And again, stay tuned for Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!. Fee-Fi-Fo-Fum, Wayne Shorter tune featuring Jacob Rodriguez. Thanks, Jacob.
Thank you. Thank you.
93.3 Asheville.
Programming support is brought to you by The Organic Mechanic. Located at 568 Haywood Road in Asheville, The Organic Mechanic specializes in all the services, repairs, and maintenance your vehicle needs. Reducing their impact on the environment is their top priority. For more info, organic-mechanic.com or 255-2628.
From New York City, the epicenter of the pandemic, this is Democracy Now!
There's no question there's been serious de-escalation efforts. You see it, these videos we've seen lately, one of which was particularly heinous, and I was very critical of what happened there, and the officer has been placed on modified duty and is facing discipline.
Black and brown communities are being disproportionately targeted and policed in New York City's response to the spread of COVID-19. More than 80% of the social distancing violations police issued were to Black and Latinx people. We'll speak with author and activist Jill Nelson, who herself was arrested by police in April for writing "Trump equals plague" in chalk on the sidewalk. The 67-year-old scholar was handcuffed, taken to the police station, and held for 5 hours. Now the so-called graffiti grandma is speaking out. We'll also talk to her lawyer, Norman Siegel, former head of the New York Civil Liberties Union. Then an unusual billboard has been erected.
The Trump Death Clock is a billboard that hangs over Times Square, and what it shows is an estimate of the number of U.S. COVID-19 deaths that resulted from the president and his team's failed response to the coronavirus outbreak.
We'll speak